there. I'm Marla Cohen, chef at Food on Main. Food on Main spelled a little bit oddly. It's P-H-O-O-D. And we have a reason for that. It's for all of you that are working on your PhDs in food. We just try to cook a little bit smarter, a little bit differently than everyone else. And I'm going to show you a few tricks today on a grill. No hidden agendas here. We have a little tabletop grill with a can of gas. Take this to any park in Riverside, some of the beautiful parks, and I'll show you how to deal with it. We're going to start by making some ribs. And people get really perplexed with ribs by the names. So I brought a special treat. I brought a man pig today, and we're going to show on him where the different cuts of ribs are. Come on over, man pig. This is man pig.
Hello.
Man pig, you got to turn around. Man pig has a spine all the way around. Stand up, man pig. When you have a spine, that makes it a non-locomotive area. Everything by the spine is kind of held tightly by the spine. Doesn't move much. If you can imagine somebody on a couch, a lethargic person that doesn't move much, they're not buff and tough, they're soft and tender. So anything that comes from this area is mostly carried by the spine, not moving much, makes it tender. Those have the name either loin ribs or baby back ribs, and that comes from right here. If we turn our man pig a little, and he lifts his arm up, oh, man pig for sure, this area here is what would be called the St. Louis rib. Semi-locomotive, does a little bit of work, carries some of the weight of the body. That would be where the St. Louis ribs come from. And then if we turned our pig all the way around and we took the St. Louis rib and this area, this is a hard-working area. It's on the bottom of the pig. Every time the pig breathes, those lungs in and out, it's locomotive all the time, every breath. When it walks, it's carrying all the burden of the weight. This area is going to be tough, but because it's also in the breast area, and I won't touch that, but the breast area, it's going to have some fat. So it's a contradiction. It's lean, but it's fatty in different spots because of its location, and it's also very tough because it's so highly locomotive. Those, the easy way to remember it is they're called the spare ribs, and the reason you know that is because there's a lot of spare parts. So we're going to say goodbye to our man pig, and I'm going to show you what those ribs would look like actually on a pork rib. This is the spare rib, and you can see on here, if you were to cut these down here, that would be what's called the St. Louis rib. That is this rib right there. So all this excess, which is the breastplate, the diaphragm, little flaps, makes the rib actually cheaper per pound, but it costs more because it weighs more. The St. Louis rib is our favorite rib to use at Food on Main because it has the tenderness, quasi-locomotive, not as locomotive as the spare rib, but unlike the baby back rib, it's a little bit bigger and a little bit meatier. The baby back rib has this highly curved bone that you can see and a thicker knuckle at the end where it's separated from the spine. The baby back rib is the most expensive per pound of the lot because of this one little area of meat which lies against the tenderloin in the back, and this is succulent, delicious, and incredible, but it makes it really, really expensive. And the second thing it does is it makes the meat cutter want to be a really good meat cutter. When they cut the meat, because they can sell this portion with the loin for more, they trim so close to the bones on a lot of them that you really don't get much of it. We have not such a good meat cutter on this one, and these would be incredible. These are probably the biggest bang for the buck, the St. Louis style rib. Now, when you cook pork, when you cook beef, when you cook any meat, probably the biggest thing that's the struggle is to get it tender and flavorful at the same time. Knowing that a locomotive muscle is going to be tough also tells you it's going to be extremely flavorful. The more a muscle works on any animal, the more flavor it has. The problem is the less palatability. So we can counter that with some wisdom of cooking in the kitchen. If we want to tenderize the meat and we don't want to pound it or beat it because that makes it kind of weird texture, we can add some things to it very simply that naturally tenderize it. One of the best natural tenderizers in existence is a gift from Mother Nature called honey. Honey, by the process of making it, is an invert sugar at room temperature, meaning it's liquid at room temperature. That enzyme that keeps it liquid at room temperature, which bees give us, is also the enzyme that breaks down the structure in the meat that's tough and not palatable. So if you were to take honey and put a little bit on the meat and bake it in the oven for a short period of time, that will tenderize the meat. So we're gonna rub a little bit, maybe a tablespoon or two per rib, onto the rib. And then I like to add a little bit of a flavor profile. On the ribs, I like to add an item that's called liquid aminos. Liquid aminos is made from soy, much like soy sauce. But the thing that's different about it is it has all the essential amino acids in it, making it much healthier. You always hear vegetarians talk about how they have to have rice and beans, because amino acids are the building structure of all cells in your body. It's what makes food healthy. And because nothing really possesses all of the amino acids, you have to eat foods in combination. This provides it. So it actually is a healthier twist to making the pork flavorful while adding great, great quality to it. So we're just gonna put about a teaspoon and rub it on. And now it's ready for the oven. If we take this rib, we're gonna actually put it in the oven and bypass the grill. We put it in the oven, covered with foil, for about 35 to 45 minutes at about 400 degrees. And when it comes out, it's going to be incredibly tender and look like this. This is the beauty of doing ribs in the oven. When you bake the ribs in the oven, you can put them in your freezer and keep them until the day you decide to have a barbecue. And then this is the trick of all restaurateurs. They can't take 45 minutes to an hour to pre-cook the rib while you're waiting. So instead of doing that, we do what's called par cooking, which is what we did. Then we're gonna add a little barbecue sauce. This is a very simple, basic barbecue sauce. You can get the recipe for it at foodonmain.com. And to this barbecue sauce, we're looking for a little bit of fun and sticky tacky, because we're gonna have a barbecue outside, a picnic. So we add a little bit of apricot jam or apricot pastry filling to it. And we just put a light coating on the rib and turn it over and get the bottom side. And then we put it on the grill. And when you put something on the grill, you always put the presentation side down first. What that means is the side that people are gonna see is the side that goes against the grill first. So we're gonna put this on. And then while it cooks, we're gonna start on our next protein. All we're looking to do with this is to caramelize the natural sugars that are in the apricots and the tomato and the things that are in the barbecue sauce, and it will give it like a sticky tacky feeling and flavor. And in there subliminally will be the overtones and undertones that came from the liquid aminos and the honey, which tenderize the rib so it's fall off the bone. A lot of times when people cook the ribs to the fall off the bone stage, they've overcooked them. And the problem with overcooking is that then you lose flavor. You have tenderness, but no flavor. So by using the combination of the honey for tenderness and the heat for cooking, but not overcooking, you're gonna end up with a perfect product. All right, we're gonna move on to the salmon. Salmon is a unique item in that it is very high in healthy oils, omega-3s, and all those kinds of things, but it tends to let them exit. And when you cook it, a lot of times you'll have this little jelly, almost foam, come out of it. And that happens with really any fish that is a scaled fish. It won't happen with fish like catfish and things that don't have scales. But if the fish has scales, that's like already a hint to you that it needs some kind of outside protection in order to survive and thrive in life. So that tells you when you cook it, you need to provide it with that protection again. When you cook, most people will take a thermometer, they'll poke it in, they'll do all kinds of things to food to tell if it's done. So we're gonna show you two tricks here. The first one is called creating a pellicle. A pellicle, an easy way to think about it is to think of the very thin membrane on the outside of a mushroom, or if you need something that's really obvious, think of pantyhose on a fat woman. When I put pantyhose on and pull them up, if I were to poke a hole and have an accidental rip in my hose, then what would happen is all of my excess cellulite would go right to that hole and bulge. That's what happens with food. So we're gonna create a pellicle, And you really know about this pellicle because you've heard in the past few years about brining a turkey. Gonna check on our ribs here and turn them a little. Ah, oh, we're getting nice caramelization. Beautiful. We're gonna flip them over. We're in the firehouse, and I've been trying to create smoke to drag those firemen in here all the time because, oh, firemen. But they're not here. They're out on a call saving lives. What gives? I want to cook with them. All right. To create the pellicle, you have to brine. You can brine with one of two ingredients. You can brine with sugar, you can brine with salt. If you brine with sugar, it's given a different word called curing. We're going to brine with a little bit of salt. I have about a half a quart of water and maybe 2 teaspoons of salt. Kosher salt is what I use. We don't use table salt because table salt has other additives to it. Think we're ready? Just about ready to eat these. We'll cut these in a moment. All right. We're going to put the salmon in, and we soak it for about 30 seconds. Kind of think of this as a man who shaves and cuts himself a little, and he uses what's called a styptic pencil. He's cauterizing it so his nick can't keep coming out. So we're cauterizing all the cells that we opened when we cut the salmon into a portion. Kind of a fun little trick to know if your fishmonger or your butcher is giving you high-quality fish. When you put salmon or any raw fish in ice water, if you had ice in here, if it floats to the surface, it's fresh. If it sinks to the bottom, it has been frozen. Frozen doesn't necessarily make it bad, but what it does is it lets you know if you refreeze again, you're going to lose some quality. Every time you freeze and refreeze, you pop cells and you lose wonderful proteins that will come out. So now what we're going to do is dry it. We're just going to pat the salmon slightly dry. And it's funny because then what we're going to do is wet it again. And we're going to go back to the simple liquid aminos. This is the quickest, easiest preparation. We're just going to touch it with about a quarter teaspoon of liquid aminos and sugar. Why sugar? Sugar's a carbohydrate. We have maybe a teaspoon on 3 portions. When we put it on the grill, which we're going to spray with a touch of Vegeline at an angle, if we go directly in, we'll have a fire. And they'll all come running, won't they? Oh, maybe we should spray directly in. We're going to put the salmon on. Now this is where we're going to learn some cool techniques of grilling. And part of the thing about grilling is that when you grill, you don't want to keep turning things over. If you keep turning things over, you get kind of a rotisserie process. Imagine being on the beach in the sun and you start to burn on one side. You turn yourself over and you burn on the other side. But your lungs and your heart and your stomach never burn or cook. They don't cook all the way through because you keep turning it, right? What you're looking for on any protein, salmon, fish, chicken, anything, is you're looking for the outside to become opaque and the inside to still be raw. I'm gonna slightly turn it on the bias in a concentric pattern because I don't want to turn it over yet or I'll start that awful rotisserie process. And this is where you'll find hot spots on your grill. There's a trick to finding hot spots on your grill at home. If you take a wide jelly roll pan and fill it with about 1/2 inch of hot water or cold water, and then just wait a little longer, set it on top of the grill. And when you see the spots that boil quickly and the first spots to boil, those are your hot spots. So if you need intense heat, those are the spots you're going to go to. I can see right here on this grill it's here. If you don't and you need slower heat, you can move things to the side. So this is ready to turn now. We're going to turn that piece. This one is not. We're going to do it again because we have some hot spot and cold spots. In order to tell whether it's done, it's the same with fish, same with chicken, same with anything. If you were to take the hand that you write with, I'm left-handed, so my left hand, this pad, the fatty pad of my thumb, is going to be the thermometer, the recipient of the thermometer, and the middle finger of the hand I don't write with is going to be the thermometer itself. If I close my eyes and relax my hand and push, that's what rare feels like. So if I push the salmon in the center, the thickest part in my hand, and they feel the same, it would be rare. If I take my fingers about this far apart and feel it with my eye closed so that my senses are heightened, that's medium. If I make a tight fist and feel it with my eyes closed, that's well done. So I'm feeling it, and it's almost to the point of a tight fist, which would make it well done, which is perfect for removal. So we're going to remove this piece. And in getting ready for the party of firemen to come back from the call, we're going to turn this one and this one now. And while those cook, we're going to put on a little bit of pineapple just to give it a little bit of a tropical flair. Now, what's interesting about pineapple is pineapple has an enzyme in it. I love cooking with enzymes. And this enzyme is a natural tenderizer for meats. The enzyme is also found in kiwi and papaya. This enzyme is called papain, P-A-P-A-I-N. And if you ever go to Hawaii and you go to a pineapple plantation and you eat pineapple, you start to get a weird feeling where your tongue and your inside of your mouth almost feels like it's peeling away. And the reason for that is because you have cell structure in your mouth and you're starting to destroy it and break it down with the enzyme in pineapple. The reason we're gonna cook it and leave the center in the pineapple is because this enzyme will be like Mother Nature's self-tenderizer for the pineapple itself. So we're going to cook it and feel and to see where we are. We're about medium on both of these pieces. If we were in LA, I'd pull it off now. If we were in Indiana, I'd let it keep going till it's well done. Find out how your guests like it and match the part on your hand. It's a great thing. You don't need a thermometer. If you put a thermometer in there, what you do is you create a hole in the pellicle that you spent so much time creating to hold in all those great juices. And now what you've done is you've created an exit wound, and all of the great juices will come out of that hole. When I see the thermometer that is a fork with two probes in it, I think, oh my gosh, that company has just, they've taken advantage of all the Americans. You don't want to put anything in here at all. Let it be on its own. All right, I think we're there. So this is what three very simply cooked pieces of salmon look like, and they're incredible. We're gonna move on to the last trick of the day, which is the famous and the killer burger trick. Burgers. Let me give you a couple hints about buying burgers. When you buy it, stay away from the words ground beef. Even though a burger is ground beef, you want them to identify what cut it comes from, and here's the reason why. We're gonna bring over our man cow now. Come here, man cow. He was man pig a minute ago. This is Cesar. Cesar is, we're gonna call him a cow now, bovine. He's a steer, aren't you?
Yes.
All right. If I were making hamburger out of Cesar and I wanted ground beef, Cesar, I could take it from your cheek, the area of your head, I could take it from underneath your ears and your neck, I could take it from anywhere on you that isn't organ meat or bone. I could take it from any red muscle structure from anywhere. That's kind of scary. And what's more scary is that when they're in the cutting room and they're cutting it, big, huge, 55-gallon, sometimes 110-gallon barrels of meat, as they trim the meat, anything red that's just any red at all goes into that big bucket and is made into ground beef. So you want to stay away from that. And what you want to do is you want to specifically get from a certain area so that you know it's not from an area in the head or a place by the spine or somewhere you don't want. Those are whole muscles or primal cuts. Thank you, man cow. Those cuts have names. It would be ground sirloin, ground chuck, ground round. Any one of those is okay. It doesn't really matter once you grind it whether one is better than the other. Some people swear by one kind, some swear by the other. All I swear by is staying away from the name ground beef. All right, so now that you know what kind to buy, the fat is the next question. Pretty much if you stay in the 75 to 80 to 85% fat to lean ratio, you're okay. So, or beef, I'm sorry, the other way, lean to fat. I myself prefer 85-15. I don't like it too greasy. I don't like to have all the flare-ups in the grill when it melts. So I'm an 85-15 girl. Don't know what you want to be. Here's the trick. When you make the burger, you want to start with it cold. because it's ground up and there is fat in here, if it starts out warm, you already have, I call it points against you, because it's gonna melt so quickly, all that lovely fat that is in there is gonna go down in the grill, create a fire, excess carbon, and the not good taste. Here's the trick to a burger. Put a little hole in the center of the burger. Not huge, just small enough, and put the cold burger on the grill. Because the muscle structure in the meat will contract. Burgers don't get bigger when they cook, they shrink. That hole will fill up. You can still judge it the same way, rare, medium, or well, but what you don't have is that puffing in the center that never cooks all the way through. So if you put the burger on, you can put the little hole in the center, it will close up, and put it on. We're looking for the same thing we did on the fish, the same thing you would on chicken. We're looking for the outside to get that grayish opaque and the center to start having juices come to the top. If we have an uneven area on the grill, this is where you take advantage with burgers. If you need burgers that are well done, burgers that are medium, and you know where your hot spots are, start the rare burgers on the colder parts of the grill, the well done on the hotter parts of the grill, and magnificently, they'll all be done at the same time, and no one will be wiser but you. All right, we're gonna look for that. And let's talk about seasoning. A lot of people put a lot of things in their ground beef. They'll put chunks of cheese, they'll do all kinds of things. I'm pretty much a purist. I like things after it's cooked or after it's turned, and I'll tell you why. A lot of people use dry rubs, they'll use all kinds of things. If you start with really high quality product, you don't have to add a lot to it. The food will speak for itself. But sometimes you need just a little bit of seasoning. The reason I'm not a dry rub fan on anything that's grilled is because the rub's going to fall. There's gravity here, folks. The rub is going to fall down into the grill, and I look down there and I watch all my money going up in smoke. I prefer to put a little seasoning on after. For me, dry rubs belong in anything in the oven that you roast that doesn't have gravity as its enemy. If it's on the outside of a roast in the oven, it's not gonna fall off, it's stable. So we're gonna add a little bit of one of our house seasonings, and this is our bull seasoning, which is designed for cuts of meat, steaks, and burgers. We're gonna add it after we turn it. Now we could add it at the table, but we love getting a little bit of that excess heat and the smoky and all the stuff that the heat and the grill bring out and the aromas and the natural oils of the spices. This spice has a little bit of coriander and some mustard seed and some other things that the heat will generate their natural oils to come to the surface, so when you eat it, it's like, oh my gosh, this is great. And knowing that, it also tells you you don't need a lot of seasoning because the heat is going to add the special touch that you need to enhance it. We're gonna turn this a little on the bias. If you turn this on the bias and it makes that beautiful little diamond shape, there's actually a name for that in restaurants called quadrillage. And the quadrillage is designed not because they're looking for beauty, it's designed for even cooking and even heating. I'm kind of a medium person on burgers. I don't like that rare because by definition it's a burger and ground meat. So we're gonna flip it and that hole is just about gone. And we're just gonna look and see and wait a second, and we're going to touch it and use our thermometer with no hole in it and go to town and tell if it's done. All right. While we're waiting for that burger to finish, we're gonna go ahead and cut the ribs. The trick to cutting ribs is to cut the ugly side. And the reason for that is so you can see the bone. And without hesitation, you don't want to drag your bone, you just cut sharply between each one. And there you have it. A nice juicy rib, caramelization on the outside, no dryness. It can be done ahead, it can be done, put in your refrigerator or freezer, 5-10 minutes on the grill, and you have an awesome party. And there's our burger, just about medium. Thanks for joining us for Flavors of Riverside. We hope to see you again. And if in between the television show opportunities you want to learn how to cook a little more, just call Food on Main. We can schedule your private cooking class. Just call and ask for Lynn, and we'll dial you in and teach you simple things that make you the food hero, the P-H-O-O-D hero.